good start.
Are we all ready?
Yep. All right.
Are we?
Are you recording?
Yeah.
Jeez, it's like it's been forever, Josh. It's been like 2 months.
I know.
Has it been 2 months?
Why?
It's been about it's probably 2 months. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's
I guess we lost any followers that we could have ever built up. I think it's pretty much done. We're starting from scratch now.
Yeah, just call it another season. It's the new season.
I know. After that season of one episode.
It's a new season of the Comics Claptrap. Welcome back.
Yay! Is it just because you've been so busy with your publishing venture and Josh so busy with like all his many different blog sites?
Because
I've been waiting.
I think we've been trying to do a podcast episode each month, and we were going to have a guest last month, but things didn't get, our schedules were always,
I like how Rena tells us
I'm blaming our guests.
Yeah.
No, I think we're all pretty busy, and I know that you're busy because
this is the weekend of this is probably going to come out the same weekend of Mocha and Stumptown, right?
Which I think is funny because Josh and I were talking about this. The last episode, we were ranting about how Stumptown and Mocha were on the same weekend, and we're like, that's so far away. Like, what do you even know about that? Well, it's this week, guys. So
Neither of you guys going?
I'm not going. Oh, nope. And TCAP's coming up too, like the week after.
So much going on. I guess this is the convention season.
I guess so.
We're qualified to have a podcast.
Has there really been people waiting for us, or is everyone just like said, what?
I don't know. I mean, we've had so many episodes where people probably have missed. Like a lot of people have been like, I have to go back and I haven't been able to. I have to listen to the old episodes, so it's sort of like.
It doesn't really matter.
It would be nice if we had like one weird stalker fan who always asked us for when the next one was coming out.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, like he's just sitting there all day long, just refreshing the website.
Yeah, like the one guy.
We post something.
But you've been busy, Tin.
What?
You got nominated for and Jean Yang got nominated.
The only comics awards that matters.
For an Eisner Award, congratulations.
Yeah, I think level from now up. On,
what is the best what?
I think it's just best artist overall. I'm not sure.
Artist overall.
It's just best person overall. I think if we lose, which is likely to happen, I'm gonna go on stage and Kanye West, whoever it is on the stage.
It's gonna be this little homely Taylor Swift.
Yes, I'm just gonna be like, I'm gonna give you some time, but Level Up is the best comic of all times. Like that.
Who are you up against?
I think the only real I don't know who the other nominees are, but I do know that Vera Brusco,
good.
Anya's Ghost, that's really no competition.
That's not a good thing to say about it. They're published in the same.
Yeah, but
it's not as good as we are.
And then something like Archie something. Something about the Archies. Well, I'm not sure what that is. But the rest of the gang, I have no idea
that
who it is.
Promising. I think I'm going to vote for the Archies.
But I'm pretty confident that I had written a acceptance speech for the Eisner maybe.
Four months ago. What happens when you get nominated? You have to do this PR push. You have to do all these interviews.
Nothing. I thought it was all this crazy, awesome things. Like they'll give you a hotel room and all this stuff, but nothing. I think they give you chips and salsa before the show.
Yeah.
I think if you're lucky, you get to go and have chips and salsa with Frank Miller or something.
Oh, and you're lucky.
If I'm lucky, but. But yeah,
the Archie gang.
Are you guys going to San Diego? Are you going to San Diego?
I don't think I am because what am I doing? I'm going to Cake. I'm going to Chicago, the Chicago Alternative Comics Expo, which is going to be the first ever.
Am I nominated for anything there?
I don't think they have any awards.
Oh.
I didn't tell you guys this, but
you
I'm
going to
start publishing
that.
Stuff. So
who's going to start? The Clap Shop's going to start publishing?
No, we don't have money. I don't have money either, yeah. As I found out now that I'm starting to Are you Kickstartering? I found out that it actually costs money to publish.
Is it a lot?
Yeah, it kind of sucks. But no, Kickstarter. But it's worth it. Yeah, I should Kickstarter. But yeah, we're gonna be debuting some a book edited by Lark Pian, a sketchbook anthology that's gonna be amazing. And then later in the year, we're going to release a book of Tim Hensley's mini comics. Ticket stub. So I'm excited about that.
Wow, how'd you get that deal?
Yam books.
What are you publishing me?
My charm. What are you publishing me and Josh? My professionalism. Why?
When are you gonna publish me and Josh?
I was gonna nail down that contract.
I'm gonna call
your people.
You have to talk to my agent.
Yeah. Well, I am working on that comic that I've been working on for a long time.
Which one is that?
That Dancing with the Stars comic. So I'm trying to debut that at the cake show.
Yeah, you have to have it done before nobody even remembers what Dancing with the Stars is, right?
It's been like a year. Yeah,
it's like, are you still working a Jersey Shore comic? You know,
no. Yeah, I put that on the shelf.
What have you been up to, Josh?
You know, this and that. I'm going to San Diego, but I don't have a book yet.
Okay, but you have a table, right?
Yep.
Are you gonna table with Stella Nova again?
Yes.
Awesome. Stella Nova.
That's a good name.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's Tam. You know, you call her Tammy. But, like, Stella Nova is her like stage name.
You don't like her name?
No, I love her name.
What's your problem, Rena?
Yeah, I don't know what your problem is. You know how you're addicted to Dancing with the Stars? Yeah. I too have become addicted to a reality show.
Oh, no,
so I'm doing a comic book about storage
wars. Are you going to do a comic?
Yup!
How was that? Okay, the yup part.
I got to say that.
I saw one because my coworker.
Yup!
What is that? Is that a Storage Wars catchphrase?
It's just a reality show on A&E, right?
Yeah.
And it's about these guys that bid on like storage units that have been abandoned or haven't been paid off, you know. And so there are these kind of crazy
people
that bid on these abandoned storage units, and they like look through all, like they. Yeah, actually, yeah, we are. Someone broke into our storage unit.
Oh, yeah, a storage unit?
Yeah, downstairs.
You know, I heard...
It's probably one of those guys.
I heard about these auctions in a This American Life episode once. And I remember in This American Life episode, they made it so that the whole thing was, like, really depressing. And all the people that do it are just, like, really depressing.
Yeah.
But then you watch the show, and these guys are, like, rock stars. You're, like, you look at them, and you're, like, wow. Because one guy, like, mm-hmm. I think he like... His claim to fame is that he found like 8 Pablo Picasso drawings in a storage locker once, and another, and he found like a multi-million-dollar comic collection in another storage locker.
Guy?
No, that's the other guy. That's the guy that's always looking for the wow factor, and it just makes him seem like so cool doing this. And
you realize it's about storage units.
Yeah, and the stupidest thing is at the end they tally up all the products that they get, you know. Mm-hmm. But the prices are so stupid. It's just be like, oh yeah, this is an empty Coke can from 1992. That's $50. And it goes ching, $50. Like someone's gonna pay $50 for that Coke can, you know. Uh-huh. Anyways. I've really been addicted to it. I want to do a comic about it.
You
want
to do a comic? See how I feel?
Yeah.
I don't know if mine is that bad.
What?
But,
I think she just dissed you.
Yeah, I guess. I think it's crazy that they can make anything interesting.
But hey, if you're going to do a comic about it, all power to you.
who are we to talk?
Yeah.
I know. You're doing a Dancing with the
At
Stars
least you
one.
Can make fun of me about
what
that.
What season are you doing? Are you just doing
doing the season where I got obsessed with it completely. And
how long comics. Of a comic is it?
How long endure this comic?
I like how Josh is like, how long is this crap? And Josh is in like,
I really
did.
I love how we just love twisting Josh's, whatever Josh says, into like the most negative thing.
It's like, how long could it possibly be? I mean, really? Yeah. Oh. Josh is in 3 pages.
He's in 3 pages? Yeah. 3 whole pages?
3 whole pages.
It's like one of those things where, Like those Joe Matt, Chester Brown comics where you're like confessing your addiction to Josh as you're walking down the street.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you know. See how Chester Brown is in the Toronto guys have influenced my work.
But like how long is the comic?
It's like, come on, dude. It's like pages? Not that big. There's some drawings in there.
What?
It's all right. I could do better than that. I could draw more pages about dancing.
So have we went into the new comics? So new comics, Joshua. It's been 2 months.
All right.
You must have a lot. I want to hear about Goliath.
Oh yes.
Oh, we didn't talk about that yet.
No,
I thought we talked about that last time.
No, it didn't come out last time.
Okay, let's do it again.
Well, I don't have it in front of me because I thought that was too old, but it was good. That's a book by Tom Gauld and published by Drawn In Quarterly, mm-hmm. I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, anybody. And it's the story of David and Goliath. So, but it's told from Goliath's perspective. And it's a pretty quick read, but you know, it's a fun book. If you have read other stories by him, it's got a similar vibe of sort of a lonely character and you know, the funny stuff that happens to him. That's a terrible summary, but you know, David and Goliath.
It's kind of a nice hardcover, expensive edition, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a hardcover.
Would you say it's worth getting that for the story? I looked at it. It looked a little bit, as much as I love Tom Gold stuff, it looked a bit sparse to be in such a handsome volume.
It's a quick read for sure. So if that is how you make your buying decisions, then stay away.
Okay.
You know what I like about, I like his sketchbook stuff. That blows my mind all the time. Those stuff,
yeah,
on
the
Flickr.
Stuff on his Flickr. Yeah.
Somebody did a book of that too.
But I really like this. I mean, I thought this was a good book. I'll probably read it multiple times and lend it to people and stuff because I thought it was fun. So
cool. I'll pick that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree though. It would be cool to see like a really dense, long book of all of his doodles and illustration work and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we got? Do you have anything, Tim?
No. Well, Josh got some more stuff.
Yeah, I'm just asking. It's a round table.
Yeah, we're just having a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Okay, I just have a few things because I didn't drag out everything from the past few months, but I wanted to talk about Retrofit Comics.
Okay.
Which is a it's a publishing venture that Box Brown started, where he's putting out comics at like a regular issue sized comic book. Mm-hmm. Each month and selling it on his website, which is retrofitcomics.com.
Who is this Box Brown?
I don't really know him actually, but he's behind this and he's put out comics, I think maybe 6 or 7 comics so far, maybe more even. I think he said he was going to do one a month for a year, and then I don't know what's going to happen
after that. Tom Hart, remember we interviewed Tom Hart? Tom Hart's doing a comic with him, Daddy
right.
Lightning, about being a dad and mm-hmm. his daughter. So.
Mm-hmm. And then that one's not out yet, but that's coming soon. Mm-hmm. But you know, like some of the ones that I have here, there's one by Joe DC that's really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I love his stuff. Mm-hmm.
I'd never really seen his work before, but it's just kind of a day in his life. But it's just a beautifully illustrated book with lots of, you know, funny little moments and observations. It's called Pocket Full of Coffee.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a book called 1999 by Noah Van Siver.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. And that's kind of about it takes place in 1999 before Y2K, and it's this kind of loser guy who has a fast food job.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of
that's
falls
weird.
Yeah, that's not really up.
Fast food worker.
That's not really up Noah's, you know, alley at all.
Is it?
No.
I don't know. I don't know any of his stuff. The only thing I know of that Noah Van Siver guy is that he is on Twitter and he is constantly promoting. That guy is a promoting king.
Promoting?
Yeah, promoting. Constantly promoting.
He does a lot of comics. So
yeah.
He
No. I applaud him for promoting all the time. But do you get these Retrofit comics from like straight from them, Josh? Or do you actually go to the store or something?
They might be in some stores, but I just ordered from the website.
And
so,
like a subscription, right?
Yeah, and you can subscribe and you get little bonuses and stuff. I think it's a pretty cool kind of you know, as publishing ventures go, it's got a real sharp focus, you know, like he knows what he wants to do with it. And he's got lots of cool artists lined up, and the books so far that I have are really good. I have another one by Betsy Swarlick and Colleen Frakes called Drag Bandits, about a robber who dresses in drag. And then there's a book by Box Brown called Chubby Chasers. There's a book called Raw Power by Josh Bayer.
That sounds awesome.
It's pretty cool.
So he's printed all these books already? I thought he said he was doing one a year. It seems like...
One a month.
He's
doing one for a year. He's doing it for a year.
That's crazy.
He has it all scheduled out. So I think these artists kind of, you know, he's been working with them for a while and they know that, okay, I'm going to publish your book this year. So I think people are getting him, you know, getting him the book. He's putting
Is it published, or are they just like pamphlets?
Yeah, I think they're pamphlets.
Are they just like, are they like mini comics, or are they like pamphlets?
All of the ones that I have, so I have five in front of me. There's one by James Kochalka too that I don't have, but they're all like sort of, what, half of an 8.5 by 11, so I guess.
Okay. So it's something that you hand produce. It's not like a printed comic, right?
Well, they have color covers though.
Oh, okay.
And then the one Raw Power is formatted differently. It's bigger. So I think probably the plan is to do them this half letter size, but that one for whatever reason is different.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
I think that's an exciting venture. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah,
it's noteworthy. I don't know what else is coming up, but I'm sure. I know the Tom Hart book is coming up, and I'm really looking forward.
Yeah,
to
plus
it.
Plus those titles are really exciting, and a lot of really good artists. Mm-hmm. So it's it's gonna do well, I think.
You have anything else, Josh?
Yeah, I have one other book that I've been reading, and this is kind of weird, but it's from Image, and it's Profit.
I've heard so much about this. It's a relaunched title
that was originally, I think, a Rob Liefeld book.
Yeah, it was terrible. Stephen Platt used to draw it. He was the guy that used to draw really, like, just veins in every single muscle. Tons of veins popping out all the time.
Dude likes his veins.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the old Prophet, really, but I was a little interested in this because it's a relaunch, and it's written by Brandon Graham. Who did a comic called King City, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I've read his blog actually more than his comics, I think. And he seems like he's really interested in good comics. And so I wanted to check this out. And he's working with different artists. He's not doing the art.
Cool. I'm
pretty into that. Yeah. So have you seen, read anything, Rena? Or
no.
Nothing?
I've been out of the loop.
Wow.
Yeah. When I went to Dr. Comics, Mr. Games, they had a bunch of Ryan Cecil Smith mini comics. He's one of our fans.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I like Ryan Cecil Smith.
now you do.
His comics are beautiful, too.
Yeah. They're really good.
Nice silk screen.
We should maybe interview him sometime.
Yeah, I think we should call him all the way from
Japan. Well, yeah. What, do you have his number? We call him right now.
I don't know. I'll go.
Comics.
I don't have his number, but we'll do it next time.
Thanks again, Josh. We'll let you go
now.
Problem.
All right, guys.
Bye, buddy.
Don't work too hard, Josh.
Okay, bye, buddies.
Bye, brother.
Excited to have Father Salazar, artist, cartoonist.
I really miss him. I haven't seen him in forever.
California-based guy.
He used to be in every
mini comics
and now
guy.
You never see him anymore. Well,
did you like my intro?
Yeah.
Welcome to the program.
Seller, we miss you.
I miss you guys too.
I remember when you were just a lowly mini comics artist, just like us, and now all of a sudden you blew up,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden we never see you anymore.
And we're still just
comics. You're that friend that like, you know, they got all famous and popular and then never see their old friends anymore. Thanks a lot, Seller.
All right. Well, I'm pretty much just always home, so it's not a very exciting life. You're not missing out on anything.
So
stay in and work a lot.
So the first, I have one question to ask you first before Rena launches in with all her questions that she's written down. But you know, for a while, you know, you're kind of a staple of all the shows,
a staple
of all the comic shows, and you were doing like lots of like mini comics that were really exciting and stuff. But then it seemed like you kind of disappeared for a couple of years, and I was like, I didn't even know if you Seller was alive anymore.
What?
And then I saw I would see commercials and be like, is that Seller's work on TV? And I'm like, someone's ripping off Seller. And then I find out that it's really Seller's work, you know. And so where have you been all this time, dude?
You've been doing that.
I've been, I've been doing a lot of, mostly what I do is art shows now.
Yeah.
That's mostly what all my time goes to. And it was fun doing all the comic shows, but a big part of that is I had guys like Sammy and Jordan and Alvin. Those guys would kind of push me and Giant Robot, and they would kind of tell me about the shows and get a table, and I would just sort of jump in and it would give me an excuse to make some minis. And yeah, I do miss that. A lot of those guys, I think, aren't really doing it anymore that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a good time. It seemed like everybody was really like that community that I was sort of loosely part of. Kind of, you know, they really encouraged me to do that. But I was at the same time, I was always painting, and I just got more and more opportunities to show my paintings, and that really is what I like to do best, is to work on my personal work and build up an art show, just spend a year working on it. So I mostly do that.
That's what I was wondering about. I always was wondering what came first for you. Was it comics or painting?
Well, when I was a kid, it was comics.
Mm-hmm.
I painted, but you know, just the way a kid would paint, you know, like just grab everything there is and make something. But when I got a little bit older, I read a lot of comics and drew from comics. And that, I think, was a big sort of introduction into art and being creative, was falling in love with comics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great description of your art. I mean, like you were just saying, it's basically all of your art, whether it's comic or paintings, it's basically like grab whatever there is and make something, right? Because every time I look at your paintings or even your comics, it seems like you just grab a bunch of stuff that was just lying around and made something beautiful out of it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Well, I mean, we've had this this bright eye, enthusiasm, this kind of
I remember
there were no rules, and you were just, you know, because you could tell that you were really excited and passionate about making things. And I think I see that with your with your mini comics. Then, and even when we get to see a zine of yours, it's always just kind of really awesome, and we're all really excited because, you know, they're few and far between now, but every time you make one, it just seems like there's so much love and so much commitment, investment in each one.
It was weird because I don't think you ever had your own table at these shows, but you just roll in 2 o'clock on Saturday on the show, and then just throw down 15 comics you just made.
I like how we're just talking about Saturday.
Yeah, I know. We're not even asking questions. We're just telling them how much we like them.
Well, the most of my comics, when I make a mini comic, most of that stuff is just exists before I made the, you know, before I decided to make the comic. And making it is just a matter of going through all my boxes and sketchbooks and grabbing stuff. And some of the stuff doesn't really feel finished or doesn't really make sense until I get in front of the Xerox machine and start kind of layering things and putting things together. So it's a fun way to sort of bring it all together and tell a story. But it always seems, I'm always kind of, you know, I don't know, I never really intend to make it.
Mm-hmm.
the work, I guess.
Well, I think it's weird
a painting or something is a little more, you know, with a painting you kind of have to do a lot more steps, and so there's this commitment level.
Uh-huh.
But with the zines, you know, it's just, if I have paper and pen, you never know when something might, a story or a little character or some interesting concept might start coming out.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that, like, if you look at your art and your comics, they kind of seem like they really belong together. A lot of artists, I think, they can be painters and they can do comics, and their stuff are so different from each other. But your stuff just looks like, you know, your comics could be almost, you know, like a painting, and a painting could almost be like a comic, you know?
But I was also going to say, like, we're just talking.
Yeah, we're just talking, like, about how awesome
conversations about Saul. Like, I think it's interesting how you're still doing, you know, you're using, like, the photocopier machine as, like, a medium for, like, making, you know, mini comics and zines, and especially at a time like now where people are trying to make sure that their mini comics look as professional as possible, you know? Like, it just seems like there's a shift in how mini comics are done, and I don't know how close you are, or, like, how much you read comics anymore, but I'm wondering if you sense that there is kind of this different type of feeling with the mini comics scene nowadays.
Yeah, I'm not really up on it these days, mm-hmm. but I think that just I first started making minis in the 90s, and I think in those days, and there was already a lot of people doing it, you know, well before me, but when I sort of jumped into that world, there wasn't the presence of the, you know, the internet wasn't really an available medium for people who wanted to share their work or whatever they had to write.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what sort of happened was, back then they were so raw and immediate because people just wanted to get it out. And I really grew up liking that, and that's mm-hmm. something that feels very comfortable to me. And it, I get excited to make work that way. And I really like the medium of making a zine because it feels more intimate, and it feels like it's okay to have it be rough mm-hmm. and just sort of see what happens. But I think what has happened in general is now most of the people who had that urgency or were just looking for a way to connect their story or drawing to an mm-hmm. audience, they have the internet. So mm-hmm. I think most zines and mini comics have gone more into being, you know, either an art book or a portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So people who still, you know, take the time to make a tangible object, they are thinking of it more as an art object. And I do too. I think of it as an art object, but I still really want it to feel, I want to have that rush of seeing it coming out of the Xerox machine before I even really, you know, when the ink isn't even dry.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's still really thrilling to me. So
you spoke to earlier a little bit of the community that you, that kind of, like, pushed you to draw comics, you know, like the giant robots of people and mm-hmm. Sammy and Jordan and stuff like that. Back then, were you really part of that community? Like, did you guys, you know, besides, like, knowing each other, did you guys really, like, meet up and draw or meet up and talk? Or were you guys just did stuff and just appreciated stuff?
A little bit. I went, especially with Sammy Harcum, because I traveled with him on the Kramer's tours, and I would share tables with him. But Jordan too, and who else? John Pham and Martin Sandretta,
mm-hmm.
and
like the whole LA, the LA crowd.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, we'd get together and joke around and draw sometimes, but it usually sort of revolved around one of the events
mm-hmm.
that I think a lot of everybody's sort of spending time at home making their work, and then they get out when they finish something, everybody shows up, and you know, mm-hmm. you guys know how it is because you've been talking to a lot of cartoonists.
Yeah. Do you get to do you have a community now where you are? You were just mentioning that you're not really that close to LA anymore. So do you have an art community where you are now, or are you kind of just do your own thing?
Yeah, I'm sort of in a limbo right now. I had a lot of friends in LA that were all artists, and what happened was I met Monica, who's now my wife. Mm-hmm. And we met in Portland, and okay. she came and lived with me in LA, and you know, it was one of those things where at the beginning of the relationship, we just spent all our time with each other, and we stopped, you know, going out and everything. And during that time, we were like, well, why are we in LA? We should be closer to our families and closer to nature and the things we kind of wanted to be spending time doing.
Uh-huh.
So we moved back to where I'm from, the Central Valley, because we found a house that was on the Tuolumne River, a really, really nice house with a view of just a whole view of the river, big picture window, and you know, for a fraction of the rent we'd pay in LA.
Uh-huh.
So we moved back, and we sort of had this big adventure summer of rafting and exploring, and it was really good. And then you know, we made our plans and had our big wedding and with our families. And now it's been a while of sort of being away from a lot of other creative people.
Mm-hmm.
Except for a handful of my friends in this area, mm-hmm. there's not much of a community here.
Uh-huh.
So we drive into San Francisco periodically and see a show, but that's part of why we wanted to launch this project that we are getting ready to launch. So
tell us a little bit about this project.
Well, it's called The Trading Tortoise, and it's kind of a crazy idea. It started as initially Monica and I wanted to travel. We were thinking maybe we could see all 50 states.
Okay.
So we started off with that idea, but we wanted to do something sort of in the community of each place we visited. But it's really hard to, if you just roll into a town and you're only there for a day or two, to meet people and have any kind of exchange, and it's not really enough time to have a big you know, to meet up with a lot of artists or anybody and have a collaboration. So we came up with an idea of this trading tortoise, which is we're going to build this installation that's shaped like a giant tortoise, and we will set it up in each town that we visit, and we will be inside it. And we are going to barter things with the people who come in. So there's no money involved. We don't make any money, and it'll actually be a lot of work for us. But we're excited to do it because I think
I'm still not getting this. All right, so there is a tortoise, right? And you go to a city.
So it's like a tent.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll build it like
you're kind of staying in this.
If you look at some of the last art shows I've had, there have been fairly large 3D installation type elements in the shows, and Monica has been helping me lately with them. She's really amazing with planning and sewing and sort of helping me figure out how to make these things all come together.
Uh-huh.
So we started working on these for art shows, and then we had the idea that we can make one that we would set up everywhere we went. So in effect, it'll be a tent that we could set up, and it will be shaped like a tortoise, and we will be inside it. And we and part of this is born out of one, we really think it's fun to barter with people,
uh-huh.
and just to, you know, you just whatever you have in your pocket, see what somebody else has in their pocket. It's kind of fun. And two, we sort of wanted to have this way to interact with people that didn't really necessarily have to do with the, you know, having a show or buying anything or selling anything, just a way to sort of an icebreaker to have some sort of exchange with a stranger that could be interesting. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go, every state we go to, we'll collect things that we find, and we're going to bring a whole bunch of stuff with us. And each time we set up, we'll have a table, and we'll people will come in, and they can bring anything they want, anything they'd like to trade with us, and we'll have all these different things to trade with them.
Man, that sounds awesome. So, like, I can go in and, make a pie for you guys, and then maybe, like, trade for, like,
What will you be trading?
Like a zine or something? That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, we're actually going to have a website, and part of the goal of the project is we'll document. We already have the website, tradingtortoise.com.
Oh, cool.
But we'll document everything that we get and everything we trade. So if somebody brings something to us, we'll take a picture of it before we pack it up and go to another place, and then when we trade it, we'll catalog what it was traded for. So if somebody gives us, for example, if somebody brought in like a bird nest and they traded with us for a box of old photographs or something, then that picture of the bird nest will have a catalog number and everything, and it'll be on the website, and you'll see what state it ended up in and what it was traded for, and the thing that you got in exchange, you'll see where that came from. So it's kind of an interesting way for a person to have this kind of exchange of treasures all throughout the United States.
That's pretty cool. That's a really, really cool. And I know you said that you didn't, you're not going to get any money out of it and all that stuff, but that you have to be funded in some way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's not something that you can just... You know, I know that you're not.
Yeah,
but this you have to, like, you know, you're also giving up a lot of time.
I know.
Out of your life, right? Yeah. So are you guys just gonna save up and just do it, or?
That's exactly what our the obstacle we had to overcome. So we launched a Kickstarter.
Oh, okay.
About a week ago, and it's still going.
Got funded in like a day or something, right?
Got funded in like an hour.
Oh, it did.
It took 2 days, but it's still going, and we're we're really excited. I mean, people have been very enthusiastic, and but we when we first conceived the project, our budget was a lot higher. So when we launched the Kickstarter, we really put our bottom number that we needed to get the project to happen. So we're still trying to keep reminding people about the Kickstarter, because the more that we raise, the more we can do this. The more
it's still up.
Yeah, it's still up. Monica, how many days do we have left?
A whole month.
I think we have 11 days.
It sounds like Monica's running this show, really.
Yeah. Is the brain.
You're just like coming along.
Yeah, she really is like figuring it all out.
Besides trading, bartering, will you be doing like art events or like doing stuff for like, you know?
Like if you're in the city.
Because you were saying that you do want to like connect with other artists too.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it is, I'm hoping that when we get into community, we've in the Kickstarter and on the website, we've asked people to reach out to us and suggest things, or if there's a community of artists or a school or anybody who has an idea or would just like to, invite us to go to something that they do, if they have like a weekly event and we're there in time for it, we'd love to, that. So it's inspiring for us too. And there are, right now we only have two events outside of the Trading Tortoise events. And the first one is an art show in Narwhal, in Toronto, at Narwhal Project.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, that'll be a solo show of my work. And the other thing is, I'm gonna collaborate with an artist named Caleb Nealon in Boston at a children's hospital.
Uh-huh.
And we're gonna make a big mural for the children.
Wow.
Based on we both are really big fans of Ed Emberley, the children's book illustrator.
And love Ed Emberley.
Mm-hmm. He lives in that area, and he's also having an exhibition of some of the original work of his drawing books. So,
this
yeah,
project sounds so fun.
Yeah.
Do you have a schedule up of where you're going to be and when you're going, or are you? Is this just kind of like check the website? It's like a lunch truck thing.
That's what I said. It's like a Facebook
like a Twitter thing. We're here now.
We have a schedule up on the Trading Tortoise website, but we're updating. Like right now, it's changing constantly as people suggest places to us, and we're working out the route. But we have roughly where we'll be, what state we'll be in, and what month. And as we lock down specific venues, we're putting those up there too.
That sounds so cool. I feel kind of like since we're so close, you guys might miss us, and that kind of would be kind of a bummer. But that sounds like a really really cool project.
I think we'll come back to the Bay Area. We start off going to Toronto because of the art show that I have,
mm-hmm.
but we're gonna come back down and do some stops in California and the Bay Area too.
The real question, my friend, is your relationship ready for this? You know, this is kind of an intense, trip. You know, is this going to be like one of those things where you get back and you're just like, I hate you so much right now. I need, like, at least a week away from you.
You can just stay in the
place. And I actually don't want your answer. If Monica's there, if she can answer this question, that would be better.
The ultimate test, yeah. Well, we've actually, since we met, this is something we've been wanting to do because we both really like this. Sort of go on drives and wander around and stop at their stores and flea markets and look around for things for not only because we like to collect stuff, but also because I make sculptures out of junk. So I'm always kind of looking for things that might make an interesting sculpture. So we'd go on drives often to do stuff like that. And we kept thinking, well, it'd be great to do something like that. And make it an art project and, you know, and go farther. But, yeah, it'll be the big test.
Yeah, that's a big test. So, you know, besides the Kickstarter, you also have a pretty pretty big web presence lately. I remember Rena was telling me how awesome this zine that you were going to put out. It was on Etsy or something like that.
Etsy.
So is it different having to use the internet and stuff a lot for your art nowadays, or is it or are you finding it kind of new and creative ways to do that as well?
Well, the web presence I've had is really due to Monica also.
Uh-huh. The brain
because
is always.
I'm a Jeez. Yeah, she, I mean, that was one of the things that was missing, was the only way to see my art was typically to go to one of the galleries that had shown my work.
Yeah.
And see the examples there, like on Jonathan Levine's website.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a website for a really long time. Wow. I had one years ago and I'm not a big internet guy, so I just kind of, I forgot to take care of it and it got really outdated, and I just let it expire because I didn't really know what to do with it. And I was, I would much rather sit back down and draw than figure out how to make a new website. So I just was like, whatever. And I went without a website for a long time. And, but people kept wanting one from me. So Monica really helped me put it all together and we've gotten a really good response from that. And she also helped set up the Etsy. And so it's Monica to thank for the art being out there again. People,
thanks, Monica.
I feel like we should be interviewing her.
Yeah, okay. Can you
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome because we finally got, like I said, the last time I actually really saw your artwork, because you know I don't go to many shows very often, was actually that the animations you did for I forgot what it was, but it was awesome. And it was awesome to see your work in that type of way. How did that collaboration come about, where you got to do these cool animations for, like, I think it was a commercial, an anti-drug commercial, yeah, for kids?
Mm-hmm. Drug Free America. Mm-hmm. That happened because it actually came from the zines I did. I had it was a zine that I made maybe 50 copies of.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a zine called Come One, Come All, and I only made about 50 copies. And I left a couple at Reading Frenzy in Portland. And I think a creative director from the ad agency in Portland walked in there and found it and really thought the jokes and the drawings were funny. And he pitched this idea of basing the commercials around my drawings and that sort of weird humor. And it was a really fun project.
Did you have to do the animation, or did they have people doing animation for you?
No, I offered to do it, but they, they're pretty, they're a big company and they like running smoothly, and they worked with a really professional, animation company. Uh-huh. And I think they told me when they first animated them, they made them too good.
Uh-huh.
And they actually had to go back and make them a little more rough.
They're like, make them more like Souther, not as good.
Yeah. If I had done them, they definitely would have been rough.
Well, you know, what I always wanted to ask you this, because, I get a chance, but every time I see your work, the one of the things that really strikes me is that it just seems really effortless, you know? It just seems like you just crank it out, you know? Is that true, or is that just an illusion? Like, do you do a lot of planning, and do you sketch things out before you do it, or are you one of those artists that say, for example, you have this mural project coming up. Do you just like roll in there and then just be like, bam, there it is? Or do you have a lot of planning that takes place?
On that one, I hope it'll be like that. but because I think that some of the best work happens that way. But for the most part, it is an illusion, because you can't really. I mean, I think some people can, but it's not common to the every time you touch a piece of paper or touch a canvas that it's going to be something that's really, you know, that the inspiration is there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in my zines, there's more of that, because that's me collecting all the scraps that I sort of, actually, you know, sometimes they're not even my favorite scraps, but they're just what I have around me, what I can find. And then I see if that can become something. But when I'm working on like a big painting or something, there's definitely a lot more that you don't see. Like, I'm sketching and I might paint something and then cover it and take it out. And I think that's part of the process that also I like in the end too, because I feel like if it was too effortless, there wouldn't really have been a reason for me to do it if I didn't have some sort of struggle where I discovered something and maybe in the process of sort of, to me, I think of it kind of as balancing the accidents with the purposeful marks. And so if I start off and I make a painting and I start off with a lot of accidents, then I have to go in and I have to edit them and try to create the story that's in my head, or the character or the world that I want to paint. So it's a lot of back and forth.
So there are times where you look at a thing and you're just like, I just don't like this.
Yeah, all the time.
Oh.
but that's good. I think that's what sort of provides the momentum, is You know, you put on something and if you like it, then you keep going or adding to it. And then the second you feel that you've made something you don't like, then the next step is do you cover it? Do you modify it? So not liking something also a lot of times pushes me in the right direction because I feel a reaction to what I didn't like about it. And so I have the, you know, if I didn't have the instinct about what I wanted to do, I have an instinct about what I don't like about what I just did.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that's interesting because when how I work, like I try to plan things out and because I feel like that's the way to do it. And like the thumbnail and script and stuff. And then like right at the very end, I change everything and scrap it all and do it like spontaneously. Feels better that way.
I always think I can. I'm always like, I think I'm spontaneous. I always feel like I can roll in and do something, mm-hmm. and then I can't. Mm-hmm. And then I get all mad because I don't plan. I'm just like, I know this project's due next week, but I'm just going to roll in and do something spontaneous. Well, and then I roll in and I can't. And I'm like, I should have planned a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I think Rena's point is good because you planned it out first and then it, you were probably, you were so close to it at that stage that you wanted to be careful and mm-hmm. keep it really precise. And then once you figured out those things and you kind of have given yourself some space to let go of that planning, then you have an instinct to build on and to do something spontaneous that can work. And I think that's really, for me, that's the key to having something be spontaneous and good is that it comes after a lot of practice of either just constantly doodling or constantly experimenting. And then when you find that thing or you have some, you know, something kind of pops out that you like, you have a spontaneous thing that you can build on. Mm. But if you just go and you're like, okay, like I have this huge project and here's a blank canvas or blank piece of paper. And then you think that you're going to have this perfect spontaneous moment right when you sit down to do it. It often doesn't happen that way.
How did you get started doing? I mean, I think I don't know if this is true or not, but it seems like you've had a pretty good run. You've been able to do like some really great art projects and stuff. How did you get started or even inspired to be say like, this is what I want to do for my life? Are you formally trained or are you just kind of like an artist that's all you could do?
Well, I did. I went to Art Center. Okay. A college in Pasadena. But I mean, it's one of those things where, it's definitely something I did since I was little and it's the, everything really led up to it. So it wasn't, I've known some really great artists where they didn't realize they wanted to be artists and they started off doing something really different. But for me, it was, I always made art, any chance I got, you know, I'd go into my dad's office and just open the drawer and if I could find stamp pads and whiteout and paper clips, I'd just start making something. And after high school, I thought I wanted to be an architect for a little bit. So I did that for 2 years. And during that time, I was painting a lot. And that's when I really made the decision at the end. After realizing that my brain really was not, literal enough to do things like architecture, I realized like I really have to be something more loose, like a painter or to do comics. So that's when I decided to move away and go to art school and really push that as to what my life would be about.
I'm kind of interested in what type of comics you were into. Were they more like more art comics or just traditional superhero stuff?
Well, when I was little, it was all superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't often get to buy new comics because I didn't go into comic shops or anything when I was little, but my mom went to a lot of used comics. I had a lot of old, Silver Age Marvel comics when I was younger, and Tintin and anything else like that I could find at a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And then I got into, I guess, a little bit of the weirder comics, like Flaming Karen and the Tick and, you know, stuff like that. And then I got into Fantagraphics and drawing quarterly and those things. But really what happened that made the biggest impact was when I found out about zines and mini comics. And, you know, and I grew up in a rural town and we just really didn't have access to anything. So, I think it was whenever I got the chance to be in San Francisco with my family, if I could go into a bookstore and try to find more stuff about zines, then that would be a huge advance for me, you know, towards figuring out what they were about. So I got like a Fact Sheet 5 and I got, you know, I found King Cat and I found the Spit and Half catalog. And so I was constantly writing letters and getting things in the mail. So it was really those early days of zines, I guess it was a little more like a punk underground kind of network feeling to it back then. And that's what I think really, those are my fondest memories of comics as an inspiration to me, is that the really personal mini comics from the 90s.
Has your art always been the way it is, or when you were younger, when you were reading these comics and stuff like that, when you're still drawing and stuff, was it different? Like when you went to like art school and stuff, did you come in thinking, because I came into art school thinking I was gonna draw like Marvel. Like I was really into drawing, like, you know, like the way Jim Lee was drawing and stuff like that. And I realized that, you know, that wasn't my path. But did you always have this was your vision, like this style? I know it's probably not, it's morphed a little bit. Was this always kind of like your style, or did you have a whole different thing when you started?
Well, I mean, when I was like a teenager or around then, I love to try to draw like Jim Lee or Todd McFarlane, and I'd sit there and copy them and all of that. But I also, I think that one thing I always had was I always really liked to experiment, even in styles. So when I, like, if I look at my old sketchbooks from when I was a kid even, there's a lot of different styles. Because I would look at things and I would try to draw like that, and then I would maybe try to draw the rest of the world in that way. So sometimes I would try to draw like, you know, like Todd McFarlane or something, and I'd draw the little hatch lines and everything. But then things would get really weird. I'd draw Spider-Man, but he'd get really distorted, and then I'd draw a whole world around him. So I think like that part of the way I work now has always kind of been with me. But, you know, I think it's just constant refinement. Like the more I begin to work with collage, the more that sort of led me in a direction. And the more I worked with color and shapes and painting, that the more I think that led me to a more of a shape-based language to build worlds. And that for me, that really goes back to when I was much younger, like the Ed Emberley stuff, because I learned to draw from Ed Emberley books quite a bit. So I think, the short answer is it's changed a lot, but they're all elements of me, you know?
You know, you mentioned your color stuff. I think the best things about your paintings and even your zines and stuff like that is the colors. And I always wondered whether or not like you just saw it pretty easily. Like when you look at, when you go into thinking something, do you already have these color palettes in your head, and it's just a matter of like duplicating them, or is it quite a struggle to figure out the colors in your stuff?
Well, it's a little of both. I think there's sort of the instinctual reaction to color. And for me, that's pretty immediate. Like if I put down a color and I like it, I feel it right away. And if I don't, then I want to change it. But, color is tricky, because when you mix it and a lot of things happen, and to get really vibrant color, sometimes I do have to plan it. And so So I actually, one thing that I really like to do, and I started this when I was first working on computers, is I would make a painting and I would get it to a point where it got really crazy and I sort of lost control.
Okay.
Then I would take a picture of it and I'd put it in the computer. And then on the computer, I would just draw like really crudely, but I would block in what would be the perfect color or what would be the perfect shape.
Uh-huh.
Or what is the thing that I could subtract from this that would help me resolve it in a direction that I'd be happier with. And I began doing that, and I still do it a lot. And it, and a lot of times, I get really strange color ideas from that process.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and I can't really duplicate them and paint the way they are on a computer, and that's part of the fun. But it, what it does is it snaps me out of being too attached to something I've painted. So
uh-huh.
if I paint something really detailed, and then I take a picture of it, and then I look at it on a computer screen, really tiny, then it's easy to be like, I'm going to paint a giant pyramid right here.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you're standing in front of it and to mix all the paint to do that and to block out something you spent hours doing there, I think that's something that's not very instinctual as a painter. So I've kind of developed that process as a way to still be really, to make a spontaneous decision without it having to be in paint.
Hmm.
What kind of paint are you using? Are you using oils or acrylic or?
Acrylic mostly. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of mix, you know, because there's collage and mm-hmm. acrylic, and I use ink, but a lot of times I use this acrylic ink, SW acrylic ink,
mm-hmm.
And in pencil and wax crayons, like Dyna markers. Pretty much anything that will mix together and that I can put a varnish over in the end is fair game. Spray paint.
Yeah, your style is really distinctive, and I think that's one of the great cool things about your art is, like, you know, it's hard to find a new, like, something really new and thing that stands out as being really different. But your stuff was definitely like that. And now I've noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, but I've noticed there's a lot of people that have kind of drawn and kind of done art in the same style that you have. How do you feel about that? Do you like that you've inspired different artists, or are you kind of like, bros, go find your own thing?
You know, it's totally fine. I mean, I don't even, I mean, it's hard to know if it's somebody, you know, it's hard to say, was that person inspired by me, or were we inspired by the same thing?
Uh-huh,
and, you know, I think it's a generational thing. Like, I believe the work I do is a language that I developed, but I also know that a lot of the things that influenced me have influenced other people, and we all kind of grew up at the, you know,
uh-huh.
if there's another artist who makes similar work and they grew up at the same time as me, chances are we liked the same picture books and cartoons uh-huh. and read the same comics. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think sometimes it's in the air and you just can't really be too possessive, because you know, every artist has all the different things that inspired them. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's just part of the process. That's how things develop and grow.
You were talking about, like, early on when you were doing mini comics and zines and, like, corresponding with other artists, like, through the mail and stuff. Do you find that you're having to correspond in that sort of same way since you're, you know, living in, you know, rural California somewhere? How are you finding that you're having to mail people more, or like call people, you know?
Little bit, yeah. I mean, I have the Etsy shop, and so I'm definitely involved with mailing things, and it's really exciting when I get something in the mail, because you know, I'm out here kind of in a little bit of middle of nowhere, and I still like that, and it's still a really something close to my heart, but I think things have changed. You know, when you're a teenager, you're really hungry for interaction and everything's new. So to get something back then, to get anything in the mail was like, I couldn't wait for it. And I have those memories and those, you know, they make me who I am now, but I'm older and I think I've learned like, wow, there's a ton of amazing stuff in this world, but I really don't have time to find out about all of it anymore. You know, like when you're a teenager, you have all the time in the world, it feels like, but now it's just life kind of catches up with you. And so, it's like, well, I have all these, there are artists I know and friends I know, and I have these things already. And I want, I want to build on that with the people I know, but I'm less hungry for where I'm seeking it out and I'm sending out things and waiting for them to come back to me.
Mm.
And I miss, it's kind of sad in a way. I miss it. I miss having that thirst for it. But it's just a nice part of getting older.
But I wanted to ask you this question before Rena jumped in with her correspondence question, but you were talking about your inspirations and stuff. This is why it was kind of weird we have two hosts, but you were talking about your inspirations the other day, just a second ago.
I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. What are some of those inspirations that you have? You know, who has inspired you since, when you started doing your stuff?
I think for most people, I think it's one of those things that a lot of it doesn't really come from art.
Uh-huh.
And there's definitely a lot of artists that I'm inspired by, but I think for a lot of creative people, I think it comes out of everywhere,
Uh-huh.
It comes out of your weird friends and your crazy uncle and your, some uh-huh. strange book you find. And I think that a lot of, for me, I think nowadays, a lot of it comes from that sort of stuff, like just finding something really weird. But as a kid, it was a lot of the comics. And I was lucky to go to the museums and stuff. My mom would take me and I had gone field trips. So I had I really liked a lot of fine artists when I was younger. And I really liked to read about them in books. So when I was a kid, I looked, I really liked Marcel Duchamp and Calder.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I really liked Alexander Calder's circus.
Uh-huh.
I loved children's books. I loved Ed Emberley and Richard Scarry.
Yeah.
Robert Rauschenberg was another person that I really loved. Just the crazy mixture of materials. I think that was a big one for me when I was younger. That and Duchamp, just the idea that you can use anything. And there was actually this one book when I was a kid that I found at my elementary school library called, it's just called Junk Sculpture. And uh-huh. it was one of those kind of funky 70s books and it just had a lot of pictures of junk sculpture. And I checked that book out every week over and over and over again to see, the little thing where you write in your name to check it out?
Yeah.
It just was filled up with my name. And the librarian actually made me stop checking it out.
Oh, no.
So,
what a jerk.
She just said, I think it's time for you to get a different book.
You go back to that librarian and like yell at her. It's like, no, a famous artist. Now what?
Well, I own a copy of it now.
Oh, so good. You don't have to sign out that you still have that little piece of paper though. You still write it out every time you read it. So this is my favorite question of the show.
Before he takes over, sorry. My favorite question. But I just wanted to know when do you decide to make a zine? Like, you don't usually make what you just sort of. Is it just something like you decide? Hey, I'm gonna make a zine.
When do I decide? Sadly, a lot of times it just happens when there's the opportunity. If somebody invites me to go to something where I'm like, oh, I really wish I had a zine to bring with me. I mean, I guess that's not sad. It's exciting because I usually, when that happens, I only have, you know, 2 or 3 days to do it. So it's often pretty fun. But I'm trying to get into doing it more. And the last two zines I did, there were things that I did that I just kind of held on to. So there was, I think, a few zines ago, there was one called Lays Away the Day. And that zine had pages in it that existed for years. But I would, for example, I found a place that still had a blueprint machine, but they were about to go out of business. So I went in there and made a whole bunch of blueprints. Uh-huh. And then I saved those pages. And then when I had a studio in L.A., one of the artists, Mark Todd, his friend brought in an old Ditto machine. So when that was there, I made a bunch of pages on that. So sometimes, you know, the pages, it's just a matter of having enough to put them together.
So you, when you do zine, it's not very linear. It's just kind of like I have some pages and I have some more pages. Now I'm going to do another little thing here and it all comes together.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's a loose theme in my head and I know what belongs in it and what doesn't belong in it. So it's not necessarily like this is everything I made. Some of them are actually things I made over a few different years, but this is an opportunity or a format where I think they would all complement each other. So, yeah, but it's really, the zines especially are not linear. And I think that's what I like best about them. I think the less linear, the more I think that the experience of reading them together really strange, you know, your brain wants to connect two ideas, even if they're not connected. And I think sometimes that I really like, when I'm done with the zine, I like to go back and look through it. And then I suddenly feel like all these strange connections and all these sort of weird stories seem to be emerging out of that experience. And I think that's part of the reward for myself to do it.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
Yeah. It feels like making an art piece in a way.
I think this is a interesting interview because, you know, when we're normally interviewing people, we don't fight to ask questions. I think it's just because you're not so on the internet. Like, I never see you on Twitter or Facebook or anything that I'm always like, I have so many questions to ask the other just because you never really hear from you. So we're like, fighting.
Well, I'm trying to be more. I'm trying to be more on those things.
Don't.
Well, I don't, you know, I really don't like the world of it that much, but I really appreciate the, you know, connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't like to be, you know, on Facebook posting a lot of stuff, but, if I have something happening or if I have a new piece and I want to show it, you know, it's pretty cool that I can put it on there and people can see it. And
just have Monica do it.
Yeah, she's the one who pushed me to do it all.
So you have a Facebook account?
I was getting, you know, like more and more reclusive sort of, and she really pushed me to do that. And
you're getting to be like this weird mountain man artist.
For younger people, that's how younger people find out about most art, and I think, you know, that's cool. I wish when I was a kid, I wish I could just go on a computer and immediately find out a bunch of awesome stuff.
Totally.
But, you know, back in the, you know, when I was a kid, you wouldn't find out about, it would take you like a year of chipping away at something to find out about it. You'd see it mentioned, you'd see somebody wearing a t-shirt, and then, you know, the next time you walk in a store, you'd be like, oh, that was that thing I saw, and, you know, it took a long time to find out about stuff.
Yeah, you know, I teach high school, and all the high school kids, you know, they know all about this, like, crazy music and crazy art and stuff like that I was like, in high school, you know, I the only thing that I knew was whatever they showed on MTV, you know? And it's always so amazed that these kids have so much, like, but at the same time, I think like everything is so much more disposable now. Now that they don't have to work so hard to discover things. Yeah. When they discover it, they just kind of like, ah, now I'm done with that.
And that's the thing, because now that you're not on Facebook as much, we feel that our time with you is
like, yeah, that's precious. Why we're like arguing to fight to
so
talk
we're fighting,
to you.
Yeah.
So my favorite question, Souther, is this. Take me through a day in the life of Souther Salazar. All right. So, you know, like, I everybody, like, works in different ways and different times. And I always find it interesting to hear how you work and stuff. So, let's start. You wake up. Yeah, this is the stalker question. You wake up 8 o'clock in the morning or so, right? What do you do? What's the first thing?
Coffee.
Is it 8 o'clock? Is that when you usually wake up? Or do you wake, you're, like, a later person?
No, it's all different times.
Okay.
I'm on... I like mornings, but I also, a lot of times I really get caught up in something late at night and I'll stay up way too late. So, I don't always work in 24 hour cycles. Sometimes it's more like a 36 hour cycle and slowly I start off getting up in the mornings and then slowly I'm waking up later and later until I'm getting up early again.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of the, coffee and Monica, now my life is every day is with Monica, so we get up and we have breakfast together and I feel like my brain is really working creatively when I first get up and I'm the day is ahead of me.
Uh-huh.
I think I feel the most positive about starting a project. So right after I have coffee and breakfast, I try to immediately get to work and really make progress on something.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's probably kind of boring. It's just me working all day. But not on like a real schedule. I sometimes. I guess some days I don't work at all.
Oh, okay.
But
it seems like this question is harder for you because it seems like your schedule. I guess it's much like your art, where it's just like, whenever you feel it, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a I really believe in a lot of I believe in like inspiration, not really. Coming when you need it to. So a lot of times I throughout a week, if I don't have deadlines, I might fill my time doing a lot of weird things, like just I get something in my head that I want to know about and I'm researching it, or I might just feel like I really feel like I just need to be wandering around, so I just go out and drive around with Monica and we'll see what we find. So there's a lot of hard to pin down time that it ends up being productive and it ends up being part of my work, but it changes all the time. And it's I think that's part of my job is to kind of follow some of those plans. But mostly that nothing would come out of that if I didn't spend hours and hours just sitting down and making stuff too. So I actually have like a lot of really weird processes that I do. To help me because I procrastinate a lot.
Uh-huh.
So I have a lot of like tricks that I get myself to produce things even when I'm not producing what I need to do.
Uh-huh.
So I have I have a lot of books and binders that I keep and a lot of weird ways to process. It's I feel like I'm not explaining it, but I have a lot of like, activities that go into being, generating ideas, but they're not necessarily making work.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Kind of like a Linda Berry type.
I really like that, the book. I think it's new. I just read it at the library not long ago. What's it called? How to Be an Artist, maybe?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do
you know the book I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's really big. What is it called? How to be.
How to draw? Like,
how to be good or something?
I think it's how to draw.
I don't know. Book. Yeah, I really love that book.
Yeah, Rena actually took a workshop with her.
Yeah, the workshop for writing, for coming up with ideas. And yeah, part of it was just drawing. And what's cool though is that she has a Tumblr, which is kind of awesome. And on this Tumblr, she actually has like some exercises that you would probably be interested in trying to come up with storytelling and stuff.
What a Tumblr is.
Oh. No, really?
No, I'm joking.
it's like a blog. But she has one.
I know, I recently learned about it all.
But what are like a few of the tips or activities that you do that, you know, try to come up with ideas? I'm kind of interested.
Well, I have I actually really like Tumblr because it resembles something that I do for myself, and I keep I collect a lot of paper, like old books and mm-hmm. things from garage sales, mm-hmm. and I have boxes of it, and then I process those boxes, and it's kind of a weird sort of way for me to relax my mind and let it wander, but I go through it and I separate paper by what it means to me. So if it's a color I really like, then I put it in a special color file I have, and I collect all the different colors of paper I like. And then if it has an image on it that I really like, then that goes into one of my binders, and I collect, you know, images that are on all the different subject matters that I find interesting. And then if it's, you know, if it's just like the quality of the paper itself or the texture, there's all these sort of weird things I do. But I spread all these in a pile, and through that process, I usually get all kinds of ideas for things I want to make. Hmm. And another thing I do sometimes is I will just draw patterns, or I'll draw creatures or characters, but instead of doing it in a sketchbook, I'll do them on pieces of paper and then cut them all out, and then I put those into binders. And then later, when I'm making a painting, I might want to use something like that, but I won't be in the flow of creating it. So I can look at things I made when I was in that flow of just being loose and making lots of characters. And then I could find the perfect one that, you know, really belongs in a certain spot.
Wow, that's cool.
So,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like roundabout ways to be productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find like the best Tumblrs are things like that, where it's just an artist, like, you know, every time he sees something inspirational, you know, putting it on for kind of reference, you know, because sometimes you look at Tumblrs and you don't understand how anything is related, and it gets this like personal feel, like this Tumblr is just for this person. It's not really for the public's consumption, you know. Mm-hmm. Like if we looked at your scraps of paper, we'd probably be like, what is all this? But, you know, you'd probably know, you know, you probably mm-hmm. make more sense out of it than any of us.
He is a physical Tumblr.
Yeah. So it's almost time to wrap up our interview, because it's you know, this is going to be an epic show. Mm-hmm. But so before we go, we always like to ask you if you have been like inspired, like have you been reading anything, or have you been seeing any art or watching anything that has suggested? I'm gonna suggest something for you. I've been watching this reality show called Storage Wars. And so, you know, you feel like watching TV sometimes, you should check that show out. But do you have anything?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, awesome, right? No?
Yeah. Well, my dad sells... No, I love that show. My dad sells antiques, and I've kind of loosely been in and out of that business on a small scale.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
So, I really like Storage Wars, yeah.
I was just telling, because talking about earlier, I think it's hilarious how at the end, you know, they always try to like justify them using you know, spending so much money on these like units, and they like go through this junk, and they're just like, oh yeah, this is a paper cup, you know, 1975. That's $300.
Yeah.
Just like, really?
Yeah, it's not very realistic. Well, I think they got to save, you know, they kind of have to save face in front of the camera. And
yeah,
they don't want to be the guy who did the worst. I found a book, and I think that it's actually a bit of a classic, but I had never heard of it, and I just found it at the library. They're having a book sale called The 21 Balloons.
Okay.
No, and it's a French, it's like a children's novel, kind of, you know, like Wizard of Oz or something like that, like a novel, but with drawings, and the author did the drawings too. And it's really, really, beautiful story with really nice drawings. That's I just found that and I got really caught up in reading. So that would be my favorite inspiration at the moment.
That's cool.
I like that more than storage.
You don't know.
Well, I like
No, I will be.
Yeah, sure. So I'm
going on A&E.
Fine.
A bunch of marathons. But anyway. We are happy to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. We've been wanting to have you on the show for a long time. And that project.
Tell us when you're going to be on.
Yeah.
Starting that.
Yeah, that sounds good. We can trade you something when you. When you come around. So when does the actual trip start, brother?
It starts in June, and the art show the art show in Toronto is in June, and that'll be the first time we set it up. And from there, we'll go down to Boston, go across to Boston, and do the Children's Hospital, and we'll set it up there. Mm-hmm. And after that, we'll just be crisscrossing around the U.S. We're actually we're not going to do it all in one trip, but they'll be pretty, you know, they'll be long drives. When we get back to California, we'll take a little break and then we'll do it again and try to hit more of the states that we missed.
Cool. That sounds so fun.
Yeah. Hope you guys can make it out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And, hopefully we'll get a chance to actually see the Recluse of Cesar Salazar. It's like spotting Bigfoot or something, you know. So thanks for talking to us, and we hope we will see you in your art soon.
Okay, nice. Yeah, thanks for calling me, guys.
Well, that was a pretty cool show.
Hold on for a minute.
What? Hold on for what?
To come around the table.
Are you actually going to say something?
Yeah, I'm going to say this was an awesome show, and I'm glad that Cesar Salazar was our guest, because he's one of artists that inspire me a lot.
Yeah, I think it's weird. I just got inspired just listening to him talk. I've never really, you know, being in comics and stuff like that, you don't really see people that are, like, pure artists the way Cesar is, you know. And it's awesome that he's gotten to be able to do art and to do his art, you know, in his own terms. And he doesn't have to, like, doesn't have to change anything. I think that's really cool that we have people tell some excited to talk to him. We forgot to ask whether Dave Cho kicked down any money from his multi-million dollar deal. Got to ask some of that.
What's that? What do you mean? Oh, the Facebook thing?
Yeah.
God, I totally forgot.
I was thinking that one of the things that we can do for the show at the end of our goodbyes, instead of just doing a goodbye, we should do a recap.
Mentioned.
So first go if you see Cesar, go check out what is
Traveling Tortoise.
The travelingtortoise.com, right?
Yeah.
And you should totally contribute to his Kickstarter campaign,
right.
Which to help them do better.
And I don't know if Sparkplug is still doing that.
Yeah, they still have a few more days.
Go
to Indiegogo.
Yeah,
that's a good cause. Nurse is a pretty great comic that's coming
really
out.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, and that guy Edward, the guy that used to write Daredevil, has a book coming out from there.
Yes.
So that's gonna be cool.
I love that.
And then if you are a professional, I think you should log on to comiccon.org
and vote
for Tin Fam. I honestly, you can vote for Tin Fam Level Up for best young adult novel. But really, what you should be doing is writing Tin Fam in for best artist. I mean, try to show the man that they can't break you. That you don't care for their awards and their judging. And just go ahead and write Tin Fam in for best artist, because that will really show them.
No,
you know.
Pressure. Yeah.
And I already have a speech, so do that.
Well, if he has a speech, you guys.
Yeah. And if you can make it out to see Rena at Cake,
Yes, I'll be a cake.
Well, thanks a lot for listening again to us ramble. I know we've lost a lot of listeners, but hopefully
we're back.
Buddy. Hopefully you guys can come back.
We've been here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Bye, buddy.
Bye, buddy.